Penguin Random House Audio presents Theme Music by T. Marie Vandelli. Read for you by Sarah Mollo Christensen. Prologue. When I was still in diapers, yet to be stripped of my innocence and tooth hopeful, my father excused himself from the breakfast table, made a casual exit out the back door, crossed to a fabricated shed hunkered in a bone-dry cradle of honeysuckle in the far back corner of our lot, fetched an axe, and dragged a muddy rut back across the dormant lawn. He re-entered the kitchen, extra warm and cozy thanks to a turkey in the oven, looked upon the bewildered faces of his adoring family, and butchered them all. Well, not all, of course. I lived. Though I do believe I died a little that day. The reason he did it is almost as mysterious as why I was spared. Perhaps I was too young to be hated so utterly. Being only 18 months, I couldn't have pissed anyone off that royally. Maybe my father couldn't bring himself to kill his baby girl. Maybe he came to his senses as he yanked the blade of the axe out of my brother's back, my mother's chest, the kitchen counter, the linoleum flooring, the refrigerator door, any one of the four walls. In my younger, darkest days, I believed that I had been spared to live a never-ending life of torment, one last act of cruelty, before my father took a butcher knife from the kitchen drawer and dragged it across his throat. Not that this was told to me as a bedtime story. It wasn't all chop, chop, chop went the mean old giant, lullaby, and good night. Most of the grislier details were saved until I was old enough to handle it, when I could distinguish right from wrong, fact from fiction, the living from the dead. Supposedly when I was in the third grade. It was suggested that my mother took the brunt of the attack while trying to save her four children. Her blood tasted the worst, though I only imagined her blood in my mouth. Crime scene photographs showed that a dark fluid had puddled on the tray of my high chair, Fruit Loops floating about like tiny life preservers. I pray I wasn't so dim to have continued to eat, but the annihilation of an entire family might have taken a while, so I may have gotten hungry. Try as I believe she did, my mother could not have stopped him. Her hands were cracked open to the wrists like scallop shells. Maybe she tried to catch the axe as it took a swing at one of her sons. Maybe she had been begging for our lives with clasped hands when the blade cut through to her chest. Whichever is true, Debbie Wheeler died from a great hurt to her heart. Another theory is that my eldest brother might have been the first to die. Being 15, Josh stood the best chance of fending off the attack. "Let's take care of this little problem straight off," was what Billy Wheeler probably thought as he gripped the hilt to get as much force behind his swing as possible. Next, only because it seems chronologically sound, would have been my 8-year-old brother, Eddie. As an expert dodgeball player, Eddie would have known that a moving target would be harder to hit. Or perhaps terror held him perfectly still while his head was lopped off. It was found in the corner next to a 10-pound bag of potatoes our mother had bought for Thanksgiving dinner. How it got there is anyone's guess. You would have thought my father would have gotten into the swing of things by then, but it still took a dozen or so hacks to bring down his 4-year-old son. They found Michael under the table, holding onto our mother's foot with the only hand he had left. I was found by a neighbor boy, Rory, a friend of Josh's who had stopped by to collect him for the annual Thanksgiving Day tag football game down at the high school. When no one answered his repeated knocks, he let himself in. He told the police that the music struck him first. Not the blood, not the savagery, not Eddie's severed head in the corner, but the heart-rending desperation pouring from the speakers in the living room. He covered his ears before it even occurred to him to cover his eyes. 1. The Wheeler family home was for sale. I couldn't believe it. For all my preoccupation over what had transpired in that house, it had never once occurred to me to pay it a visit, or that it might still be standing. In fact, most of my thoughts about the house and what occurred there were just those, thoughts. As with most all disturbing nightmares, I banished these horrors to a cerebral purgatory that was unreachable by mere curiosity. On the few occasions I summoned the nerve to type that dreadful address into my search bar, something always stopped me. Like searching the internet for some softcore porn, you might get more than you bargained for. The house wasn't much different from the listings it was pinched between. White aluminum siding with charcoal-colored shingles, double-mulled windows and a three-step concrete stoop, a blacktop driveway with a two-car garage. Same as 100 others I had scrolled past. But this particular nondescript house glared just a little brighter than the rest in the Zillow template it was set in. Enough to stop my scrolling finger dead. 6211 Cat Harpin Road, Franconia, Virginia. Yep, that was my old address. The one Aunt Celia had in her address book with a line drawn through it. My old phone number had been in there too, inked out but still legible. When I was younger and still lived with my aunt, I had dialed the number 1,000 times, but always hung up after the first ring, afraid of what might answer. A slight chill ran down my spine as I leaned closer to study the business card-sized photograph. I always imagined the house in a collapse of dusty lumber, the spine of a chimney jutting out among the rubble like a fractured bone. A keep-out warning stabbed in the front lawn, not a Remax signpost. Though it was no more than a 30-to-40-minute drive away, being on the other side of the beltway, it might as well have been in Beirut. I had asked Aunt Celia to take me once, and she had specifically said that there was nothing to see, which to me meant the house was gone. But it wasn't gone. She just didn't want me to know it was there. Like everything about my family, Aunt Celia thought I couldn't handle the gory details, when in reality she was the one with the weak stomach. She had paced the room to tell me how my family died, one hand over her mouth, one covering her eyes, and bemoaning my need to know every step of the way. I just wanted to finish my homework assignment before Futurama started. The My Family Tree template had been pre-printed on yellow construction paper. All I had to do was write in the names. I knew my family was dead, so that hadn't been news to me, but that didn't mean I couldn't complete the assignment. I also knew from my cousin, Leah, that their deaths were really gross, but Leah thought everything was gross. Up until then, I thought it was just a car crash type of gross. I wasn't prepared for Aunt Celia to cut down my family tree with an axe. As I touched my pencil to the leaf marked Father, Aunt Celia snatched up my assignment, wrote a note to my teacher, and stapled it shut. By the time I thought of a few hundred thousand questions to ask her, the Q&A part of our conversation about my family had closed and remained closed for the duration of my childhood. That included the house. The shutters and front door were a different color than they once were. I wasn't sure if I liked the cottage red. They were hunter green in the one exterior snapshot I possessed. I wondered where that picture had gotten to. Probably dumped in a box somewhere along with all the rest. When I was growing up, Aunt Celia doled out family photos like they were part of my allowance, reluctantly and not without a heavy sigh. Though Aunt Celia claimed each picture was the last she had, there always seemed to be one more hidden away somewhere. Most of the pictures were taken inside the house around the holidays, but one group shot was taken on the front stoop of the house I was currently scrutinizing online. I could almost see the shadow of us sitting on the front steps, Michael sulking under his ball cap, my mother burping me over her shoulder, Josh and Eddie hamming it up with fierce grins, the blur of my father as he slid into frame just before time ran out. I hovered the cursor over the View tab, afraid to click. I felt a bit like a child who'd found a gun in a...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?